So my name is Professor Ketan Dattaria. I'm a diabetes doctor from Norwich.
Okay, and your involvement with DRWF?
So I'm a member of the Research Advisory Board. So I'm part of the team that looks at the applications that come in for research funding. So I'm part of the team that grades them and looks at them, and then we have conversations about all of them as a group together and then decide who is lucky enough to get the funding.
So we've got lots of different types of funding, haven't we, through the charity? Can you talk about some of those?
So I tend to look more at the basic science ones. Even though I'm a full-time NHS doctor and a clinician, I look at some of the basic science stuff as well. But there's also clinical funding as well. So it's divided into several different aspects, but the research starts with the basic science, so with laboratory work, with animal work, and then going on into human work as well. So there's lots of things that all of which are pieces of the jigsaw, all of which are really important.
And do you see that coming through into clinical as a doctor? Do you see that work?
Absolutely, because all of the medications, say for example, all the medications that we use have to start somewhere. So it starts with a basic scientist thinking about the molecules, thinking about what they do, doing all of the laboratory work and seeing if they have an effect on the cells. And then you have to, unfortunately, there's no other way of doing it, you have to do it on animal work to make sure that it's safe and mammals can be okay with it. And then you have to translate that into human research. And so it does take a long time, but it does translate, and some of the newer molecules that we're using these days with such amazing success started in that way 12, 15, 20 years ago, because there's no other way of doing it.
Can you talk about some of those newer molecules, the sort of things that you're seeing in practice?
So the two new kids on the block, well, they're not even really new, they've been around for the last 10 years. So one is a group of drugs called the SGLT2 inhibitors, the sodium glucose-like transporter 2 molecules, which are the drugs that help people pee out sugar, and that reduces blood sugars, but also they've been shown to help reduce the complications of diabetes, reduce premature cardiovascular death. They've now been used for people without diabetes in terms of people who've got heart failure and chronic kidney disease, because the strength of the information is so amazing. So that's one group of medications. The other one is the medication that many people would have heard of, which is the injections, the Wegovy or the semaglutide, dulaglutide, and the new drug on the block is called tirzepatide, which again are used to help improve diabetes but reduce the risk of premature cardiovascular death, improve kidney outcomes, improve strokes and heart attacks, and actually also help people lose a tremendous amount of weight. So those drugs are new-ish. Very popular around the world, so very difficult to get hold of in some places. But they started, as I mentioned, with the basic science many years ago, through the animals, through the humans, and now into clinical practice, which we prescribe all the time now.
Are they getting prescribed through GPs as well?
Yeah, of course. So the vast majority of type 2 diabetes is looked after in primary care. Type 1 diabetes, I think most of us would agree, is should be treated by a specialist, because it is, most GP practices don't have enough people with type 1 diabetes on their books to be able to manage them appropriately and properly. I would suggest, I apologise to GPs who are good at it, who may take offence, but for type 2 diabetes, the vast majority is looked after primary care, and so these are primary care drugs. So as a specialist, I would really only want to see people who are struggling or have problems. But with these newer agents, it allows them to be started early in their diabetes life. And the information is that the earlier medications are started, the earlier somebody's diabetes is under control, as soon as they're diagnosed, then the less likely they are to develop complications.
And there is that thing with people with type 2 who are loath to go on to medications. They want to manage it through diet and exercise, and are quite proud of the fact that they're not taking any medications. And I think there is an argument, like you're saying there, that actually their diabetes might be better controlled if they were.
Yes, and so this is where I think there's a great deal of education that needs to come through to people with type 2 diabetes, because whilst people do want to control their diabetes with diet and exercise, the vast majority of people, it doesn't work. And it's like, I make an analogy here with seatbelts, and I ask people if they've driven or if they've been in a car and they wear a seatbelt, and they say yes, of course. And I ask them, have you ever been through the front windscreen of a car? The vast majority will say no, but then I'll say, well, you understand the concept of risk, and you do something to lower the risk. And so therefore, with the newer diabetes medications, the information that's out there is that the earlier somebody has aggressive control of their diabetes and absolutely keeps their blood glucose concentrations and that long-term blood test called the HbA1c down as low as possible from the very get-go for the first 10 years of their diabetes life, it holds them in good stead for the rest of their physical life. And so whilst they may think that actually, yes, having no medication is brilliant, it's actually probably the wrong thing to do. You need to be treated really aggressively, really get the diabetes under as good a control as possible using these newer agents which have been shown to prevent premature death. That's what's going to keep you alive. It's like almost like saying that seatbelt analogy is like, say, well, I'll only use the seatbelt when I'm going through the front windscreen of a car. I'll only take it when I need it. Well, that's too late. We do things to prevent harm from happening to us in the first place. When you cross the road, you always open your eyes and look both ways because you don't want to. It's like saying, well, I only look when the cars hit me. That's too late. You want to take action before harm happens to you, and that means taking the medication, and that includes the cholesterol-lowering medication, the statins, includes the use of metformin, which is the most common medication used for type 2 diabetes, unless there's a problem, you can't reuse it. The SGLT2 inhibitors and the GLP-1 analogs that I mentioned before, which are the three groups of medication which have been definitely shown to help prevent harm happening to people. Early use to try and improve diabetes is the key message.
So just, can you tell people about the HbA1c? Because a lot of people don't understand what that is, and they don't understand the numbers. So you can say to people, what was your last result? And they go, well, I don't know.
I don't know, yeah.
But the doctor says I'm all right.
Yeah. There's a long answer to this question, and I'll try and make it easy. So your body's made up of lots of different substances, one of which is called protein. And proteins have what's called a turnover. That means a rate of manufacture and a rate of breakdown. So for example, your skin, we all know that we shed skin. So it's made at the bottom and it comes up slowly to the top and where it's shed. And that can take a long time. So everything is turning over. The fastest cells that turn over in your body are the lining of your gut. So you've changed the lining of your gut every 12 hours or so. So you're physically not the same person. So, and the slowest thing that turns over is bone. It takes 7 or 8 years. So you're physically not the same person that you were 7 or 8 years ago, except your nerves, which don't turn over. So with the turnover of proteins, every protein has glucose attached to it. The more your blood glucose, the more protein, more glucose is attached to protein. And one of the proteins that glucose is attached to is found in the red cells of the blood, and that's called hemoglobin. So when glucose is attached to anything, it's called glycated hemoglobin, and that is HbA1c. And red cells in the blood last for about 3 months before they're manufactured and then they're degraded. So they last for about 3 months. And that's why the HbA1c is a reflection of the prevailing blood glucose over the previous 3 months. Now, a normal HbA1c in people who don't have diabetes is less than 42 millimoles per mole. Diabetes is diagnosed if your HbA1c is 48 millimoles per mole or higher. Pre-diabetes is therefore 43 to 47 millimoles per mole. What we want to try and do, so if you have diabetes, your HbA1c is greater than 48 or above. What we want to try and do is get the HbA1c, either using diet and exercise or the medication that I mentioned before, down to as close to 48 or lower that we can for as long as possible to ensure that the risk of developing complications is as low as possible. Because all of the information over the last 40, 50 years is that the higher your HbA1c, the more likely you are to develop the complications of diabetes. And that is both the small blood vessel disease, the microvascular disease, which is eye disease, kidney disease, and nerve disease, or the big blood vessel disease, which is strokes and heart attacks. So the better your diabetes control, the less likely you are to develop complications. That's for both type 1 and type 2. And of course, with type 1, it's always that bit more tricky because it's the management controlling the insulin, and that increases the risk of hypoglycemia. We want to try and get the HbA1c down as low as you can without increasing the risk of hypoglycemia. It's a tricky juggling act.
And so pumps and the new CGMs, yep, are so important for people living with type 1.
Absolutely right. So, one of the insulin's been around now just over 100 years, and we've all known that insulin is a medication which has got what's called a very narrow therapeutic index. That's a technical term that means it's easy to give too little and it's very easy to give too much. And so to give the right dose, it's actually really, really hard when you have to use the pens and needles and dose it up yourself and trying to judge how much carbohydrate you have, how much exercise you've got, what time of the month it is for many menstruating women. All of these things really make a big difference and make it very tricky. With the newer CGMs, new closed loops, the newer devices that we have, a lot of that thinking is being taken away. So there are new algorithms which are being developed within the machines that allow the sensors to talk to the machines, the pumps, and allow people to have a constant infusion of insulin. At the moment, so that's the CGM and the pumps, at the moment when they communicate, we still have to tell the pump when you have a carbohydrate meal or a carbohydrate load, so you have to tell it and you have to bolus yourself. So it's called the hybrid closed loop. But I'm sure in the very near future we'll have a fully closed loop where their thinking is taken out, and hopefully there'll be less room for mistakes and errors, and people can live a complication-free life right from the very get-go. That is the ultimate goal for people with type 1 diabetes using that technology. Of course, there's other things that we've been doing in the development of restoring beta cell function and so on, but that's for the future.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that for the future?
So at the moment, of course, there is in the UK, you can get islet cell transplants. So there are only a few centres in the country that do that, but very, very, very tragically, people have to die in road traffic accidents or whatever reason for them to be able to, for individuals to be able to donate their pancreas so that the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas can be harvested and then injected into people who have type 1 diabetes. So it's the difficulty with that is because of the nature of the cells coming from somebody else, then the recipient still has to take medication to reduce the risk of rejection of those foreign cells. So they're still having to take medication. They may not be on insulin or maybe on tiny doses of insulin compared to what they were on, but they still need to be on insulin. So we have, and the number of people for who that is possible is very low, and so there's a great restriction on, you have to be, hypo awareness or lots of different criteria to be able to be eligible for islet cell transplantation. But what's going on in the moment is that there are companies developing techniques where an individual has their blood taken, the cells within the blood are changed in a way that they can be re-engineered to be their beta cells, the insulin producing cells, and so when they're re-injected into the individual, they are their own cells and they don't have to take any anti-rejection medication. But that's likely to be that you'll have to have that done every few months, so it's still likely to be very expensive, but that's in development. You've got other companies which are developing taking animal beta cells, pork or beef or whatever, but they're engineered in such a way that the proteins on the cells mean that they're hidden as foreign cells so that you don't have to have anti-rejection medication. You've got other ways of creating beta cells in the laboratory and giving them back to the individual. So there's loads of exciting basic science going on. But again, it's always going to be, every time you go to a meeting, you hear about these new developments, it's incremental change. We will eventually get there, I suspect. But when that will be for common use and people with type 1 diabetes so they don't have to think about it anymore, don't know, can't tell you.
But that is something people often ask, when will the cure come? And whilst technology is amazing, this sort of research that, we DRWF fund the...
Yes.
Islet harvesting at Oxford. And those are things people don't know about, I think, because they're not generally discussed.
Exactly.
But there is this amazing research going on, isn't there?
There is, and the reason people don't really know about it is because unless you have the problems, if you have dreadful hypoglycemia unawareness, if you have really severe hypoglycemia, if you're having lots of problems, then actually nobody would discuss that with you. So there is, because of the limitations and the numbers that are of availability for islet cell transplants, you have to go through the process. So you'll have to go through DAPNE often, you'll have to have structured education, you'll have to have gone through a pump, you'll have to have had CGM, you may have had to go into a closed loop. And even then, if you're still having problems, and so it's a small number of a small number of a small number of a small number, that's when they might go, you might be eligible for an islet cell transplant. And even then, there are hoops to get through to make sure you're still eligible for it. So there are, that's why the number of the people getting it are very small. Because, of course, as I said before, the way to have a transplant is very tragically for people to be able to to donate their pancreas.
But for some people, that infusion, I think they normally have about two, don't
yeah, that's
they?
Right.
Can take them off insulin.
Absolutely.
Not permanently, maybe, but certainly for quite a few years.
Absolutely. So it works beautifully for many, many people. So the first transplant recipient actually was a chap called Richard Lane, who ended up being the president or chair of Diabetes UK many years ago. This is 20, 25 years ago. I remember when I was a trainee back then, hearing about this guy. It's extraordinary. And he was off insulin for many, many years and then had to go back onto a small dose of insulin again, because the underlying process that kills off the insulin producing cells in people with type 1 diabetes, the body's own immune system, that doesn't go away. You can't get rid of that at the moment. And therefore, you have to, the underlying process still kills off even the infused beta cells. So they develop the need to go back onto insulin once again.
Fantastic. Anything else you'd like to add to the discussion?
No, I think this is a fantastic resource. And anybody listening, I'm very grateful for your attention. And I really hope that you would give money to the cause, so to speak, to allow this organisation and others actually to be able to continue the fantastic research that's absolutely necessary to improve the lives of people living with diabetes.
Thanks for listening to this Living with Diabetes special podcast report from United Through Diabetes 2024, presented by Claire Levy and brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation.